Welcome back to the National Cancer Prevention Workshop, produced each year by LessCancer.org. I'm Miles O'Brien, the chairman of the board of that organization, and we're continuing our discussions we call the John Dingell Cancer Health Disparities and Access Interviews. And today, we're going to talk about health disparities in the context of rural settings with someone who knows an awful lot about that. Rob Marino is the executive director of the Fauquier Free Clinic outside of Washington, D.C., Warrenton, Virginia. And this is an organization that for about 30 years has providing free healthcare to those in need in that community. Rob, good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks, Miles.
Rob, tell us a little bit about Fauquier's free clinic, how it all kind of got started, and what gap it attempts to fill in that part of the world.
Well, the free clinic started, I think, in 1993, a little before I was with them, in order to bring healthcare, dental care, and eventually mental health care to low-income families here in Fauquier County and Rappahannock counties in Northern Virginia. At that time, physicians and dentists in our community were seeing a lot of patients who couldn't afford to pay, or even if they were willing to see them for free, they would find that they didn't have access to x-rays and diagnostic services and medicines, a lot of children who weren't getting access to care. And so it became kind of a grassroots response to a local need. And we've grown and grown ever since then. And now we have a 5-day-a-week multi-specialty clinic that still doesn't charge any patients any money for healthcare. It's a pretty great thing to be associated with.
So before this existed, the folks you see in this office, where would they go to seek healthcare?
Either nowhere, I think was often the answer, or to the emergency room. And as you can imagine, that's a pretty terrible way to get your healthcare on a regular basis. And so it really wasn't working. And, you know, this is a nationwide problem, but it was pretty acute in our community. We're in sort of a rural outskirts of D.C. area where there are not a lot of other services and folks have to travel a ways to get help.
So this is a crucial gap that you're attempting to fill. To what extent do you think you're reaching everybody in your community who has this need?
We've come a long way. There's still plenty of folks who I think wait too long or find it too hard to get help. But we are up to about 2,000 people a year that we're able to reach, and some of them have pretty complicated and difficult problems. So we see them quite a few times a year. So we're making a big difference in our community, the size that we are, but certainly we're not satisfied.
You've got unprecedented demand, as I understand it. What is driving that? And is this perhaps related to the pandemic?
The pandemic hasn't helped, of course, but, you know, folks in our community, there's a pretty wide range of incomes and family situations, and the people at the bottom are left out just like in any other situation. Getting access to preventive care and things that don't feel like an emergency, if you don't have disposable income, that's not something people elect to do very often. So we really have to make sure that that's available and do outreach and kind of explain and share and teach and welcome folks so that they come in and be a part of their own healthcare.
Give us a sense of kind of, you know, a typical scenario, a typical kind of patient that you see and how you address these issues.
Well, our typical patient, there are a lot of different kinds of folks. We see adults and children. A typical family is struggling with obviously a lot of financial pressure because that's what we're all about. A single mom, you know, might be a kind of a typical patient for us. Lots of adults ages, you know, 30 to 50 who have all kinds of healthcare needs, dental care needs, and, you know, more and more lately, mental health care needs that. There's just not a lot of options in our community, even if you have money and insurance, but of course, especially if you don't. So we're helping people with asthma and depression and high blood pressure and screening tests for cancer, like pap smears and mammograms, and making sure that those things are happening. Dental care and, you know, from emergency dental care to preventive dental care. And then, you know, whatever counseling and support we can help people with. that's what we're doing.
And this is something that is funded entirely based on charitable contributions. Is that how you keep things going?
That's the right question. We do have a lot of local support, financial donations and charitable contributions. In January of 2019, Virginia elected to expand Medicaid for adults. And, you know, before that, none of our patients had any kind of payer at all. Now about half of our patients are completely uninsured and about half have a Medicaid payer. And so we do get a little bit of money through the Virginia Medicaid system, but it is mostly local foundations, families, donations, fundraisers, that kind of work.
It's on the one hand, it's heartening to see this. On the other hand, it makes me sad that we need this in this big, beautiful, rich country we have. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I feel the same way. You know, we live in a pretty wealthy part of Virginia, in one of the wealthiest parts in the country. And yet there are thousands of people who are left behind. About 1 in 10 people in the counties that we serve is completely uninsured. And our eligibility process, we do some screening to make sure that we're reaching the right people. And we see folks whose income is under 200% of the federal poverty limit. So for a family of two, that means that they're living, you know, probably under about $35,000 a year in household income. Our average patient is living on about $12,000 a year. You know, and in this community, that's not enough, you know, to take care of your family needs and also buy healthcare. You know, no one can buy healthcare given what it costs.
Not by a long shot. Should there be further expansion of Medicaid, or, you know, let's take it a step further. Should we just have a big single payer system where healthcare is viewed as kind of a fundamental right?
Well, certainly I agree with the sentiment. Our whole reason for being is that no one should be left out. You know, it is a human right. It hurts all of us when the least of us are not taken care of. I will say that expanding Medicaid in Virginia has led to lots more access for people. It's still not enough. And like I said, there's 1 in 10 that still haven't been reached. But you can see the impact it has made. It has helped us to get services for our patients. Sometimes they can come to us, but what they really need is a specialist, or they need to be sent somewhere for some more advanced diagnostic services. If they have a payer, that's so much easier, and Medicaid can be that payer. Otherwise, I don't know. We're at the sharp end of the stick. We see patients, you know, one at a time and try and take care of them. But from a policy point of view, if people have access to the system, it's obviously dramatically better for them.
So one of the things which I really like what you're doing here is you're trying to bring all these siloed specialties or disciplines kind of under one roof. We tend to in this country put, you know, kind of classic healthcare in one silo, and then dental care, for whatever reason, is viewed separately, even though it has direct impact on our health. And then, of course, mental health, which impacts everything as well. All of these are kind of treated differently with different specialists. And there's never, it is infrequent that it is all viewed in one ball of wax. Talk about why you think that's important.
Well, you know, for our patients, just coming into the clinic in the first place is a reach. Transportation can be hard. Maybe the family, you know, there's a lot of people sharing one vehicle and it's needed for somebody to get to work. So when we get somebody in, we really take that as an opportunity to do everything we possibly can. And every time we send someone off to go to a specialist or to get some other service, some of them drop out, like they just can't complete that step. So if we get them in, they're seeing our physician and they're talking about, I can't sleep, I'm uncomfortable. And it becomes clear that that's because of anxiety, or perhaps it's because they have dental pain and they're not sleeping. You know, we can walk them down the hall and introduce them to one of our other clinicians and try and take care of it before they leave the room, or the building rather. You know, that's night and day for what the patient experience is, because like I said, once we lose them, sometimes we don't see them again. And you've really missed a big opportunity to take care of somebody with what was really the root of their problem.
Why doesn't our system take a more holistic approach? And I'm talking kind of writ large here.
Yeah, that's a complicated question. But, you know, like everything else, it kind of comes down to money. When you look at what, you know, I have health insurance. Separately, I have dental insurance. My experience has been that dental insurance doesn't usually do what people think it will, or it doesn't pay very well. But the fact that it's separate in the first place just leads to a splintered system, right? I mean, you can't take your health insurance card and go to a dentist. And, you know, we kind of forget that that's what was behind the whole separation of these services, but it is. I don't know if, you know, if you have liver disease, people have a telethon and you can go see a specialist and talk about your liver. But if it's your teeth, it's completely separate. And you know, people don't tend to think of it as healthcare, which is a shame because it absolutely affects your health and well-being in a very dramatic fashion.
It's kind of stunning to me because an infection which begins in your mouth can have a devastating impact on your health.
Absolutely.
And I know recently you did focus on this with an event you called Piedmont Smiles. Tell me a little bit about this, because I always marvel at whenever free dental clinics are set up in places like Appalachia, the amount of people waiting in line with horrible, painful mouths is stunning.
Yeah, thank you for asking. We had never done this before, but recently we did set up one of these kind of crash one weekend dental events because, you know, we have a dental clinic in my clinic is full weeks and weeks out to get an appointment. And we're working as hard as we can. There just isn't enough capacity to help the amount of people that need it. So we partnered with Virginia Commonwealth University and Howard University and the Virginia Dental Association Foundation. And we took over a local high school and used their two gyms and set up a mobile dental clinic for a couple days. I arrived at 5:15 in the morning in the dark and the cold, and the line was around the building for folks waiting to get free dental care. 12, 13 hours later, we were still there finishing up with the last people. Those folks had waited that entire time. They were there in the dark and the cold, and they were there all day to get dental care. You know, you said before, it makes you sad. That makes me sad, you know, that people have to wait 12 hours to get really what was emergency dental care here in this country. But it was pretty inspiring to see the dental students and the local dentists and all of the folks who pitched in together to make it happen allowed us to help more than 200 people in one go.
It's just stunning to me that in this country that happens. It really is. I sort of can't get over it. I don't. And it's interesting, no matter, even in all the conversations, ACA and you look at Medicare, dental is still partitioned off as a separate operation for some reason.
Of course, that's true. And, you know, I feel the same way about mental health care. Somehow it's considered separately from health care. I think we've made some progress in awareness for folks, but you know, all of these services need to be available to anybody or they can't be healthy.
As you do your work, I'm sure you get great gratification out of helping individuals, but is it difficult to remain, you know, optimistic overall?
I have my moments, but I get to work with people who have chosen to work in this way and for these patients. And that's pretty inspiring. Look at that dental event. You know, nobody was getting paid. Those folks were there working on their feet all day to try and take care of a need. You know, I couldn't talk them into taking breaks or getting lunch. Like no one wanted to stop. So, you know, you see what capacity we have and the kind of people that want to do better. I get some hope from that.
Ultimately, you know, and I should have mentioned at the beginning, you are also a board member of Less Cancer. This organization is about reducing cancers. And this is exactly, you know, these individuals, if they can't get preventive care, it is often the case that they end up walking down the path toward developing cancers for various either environmental or exposures to bacterium or viruses, and it's or just not screened properly. Do you feel like clinics like this, do a good service, but are enough?
I think it's a step, but the patients that we serve, the way that they access healthcare without us is they wait, they go to an urgent care when they have had the flu or something like that, or an ear infection or a fracture, and they go to the emergency room. And that's the only way they access the healthcare service. It's episodic, it's late, and there's never a primary care like relationship between a clinician and the patient. And if that's the only way you use the healthcare system for years, then the opportunity to get recommended screenings is gone. Nobody is talking to you about that. And so when you do finally have an issue, it's found much later. It's progressed. It's harder to treat. It's more expensive. It's more devastating for you and your family. It's just no way to take care of people. We've just really gotten into this bad spot where prevention and looking ahead and screening and trying to catch things and teach and talk about lifestyle, all of that is happening way too late in the process.
So, Rob, how much are you able to, either encourage or provide screening, or at least send some of your patients to get the kind of screening that would be helpful in a preventive way to keep them from developing cancers that are too difficult to treat?
Once we get the patient in, we're actually pretty good at that. Our physicians, our clinicians are talking with our patients about these things. They know what the recommendations are. They're teaching and encouraging. And we do get those tests. We have partnerships with our local hospital here in Fauquier, with laboratories and with specialists. If we identify somebody who has a potential or a diagnosed cancer, then we take that person and we case manage them and we try and navigate them and help them find their way to the care that they need. If that's through a university system or through the larger network across the state, we'll do whatever it takes to get them in and help them to find their way through that treatment process, which can be really simple or it can be really complicated. And we just take them one at a time.
I guess as the cases become more complex, it must be more and more difficult to find those kinds of services for people who have such economic disadvantages.
Well, the challenge for us is often, we are in a fairly rural part of Virginia, and so you may have to travel. And for our patients, frequent travel out of our community to go to that specialist, even if it were free, is super challenging. And so transportation and family arrangements and losing their work or whatever it is often just as immediately challenging as just getting the treatment sorted out. So we do what we can to help people figure out what resources we can find and our partners and other nonprofits that will help with transportation and the other services. Whatever it takes, we'll do it.
It would be nice if we had a system that put prevention right at the center of things.
It absolutely would. I think we've made some progress. People at least know that this is a problem, but I'm not satisfied. We're not there yet at all.
Well, we thank you for the work you do, and certainly the people you reach, I'm sure they have a great amount of thanks that are owed to you, and I'm sure you hear from them all the time. I'm sure that helps as you continue your hard work, but we appreciate it. Thank you very much for your time as well today, Rob. Rob Marino is with the Fauquier Free Clinic, executive director there, and he's joined us on the John Dingell Cancer Health Disparities and Access interviews. Appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Miles.